It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. The Fastest 15 begins with Jay Inslee. Inslee Watch, a new climate super PAC, says Governor Jay Inslee is their choice for president should he decide to run. Shock! This is the kind of super PAC that can't really coordinate, but coincidentally, the group called Act Now on Climate is headed by Corey Platt, who is the political director for the Democrat Governors Association. This, according to the Seattle Times. Jim Bruner has the piece. It's it is just shocking to see this big pack come out because, you know, it's such a mystery as to whether or not. I mean, the planning ahead here is amazing because nobody knows if Jay Inslee is going to run or not. I mean, just because he's making several trips to Iowa and New Hampshire and jumping in front of television cameras to denounce Donald Trump on a national scale. Who knows what he has in mind? Anyway, the thing that I find funniest about this whole Act Now on Climate is, one, what has he done on what is the action on climate that governance has done? He's called for a carbon tax, which has been absolutely brutalized by the voters every single time it comes up in Washington state. And that's about it. You know, Todd Myers, my friend at the Washington Policy Center, has a great op-ed on Governor Inslee's climate record where, when he first began as governor, he said, hey, my standards are going to be different. I'm going to put out these markers, and you're going to judge me by whether or not these things have been accomplished. And we're going to measure our results, and we're not going to be afraid of that. We're going to go back and see what's working, what's not working. But, of course, what happens? Nobody goes back and looks at the results. It's just you get credit for the announcement, and then nothing happens. But typical of the environmental movement, they love symbolism over substance because it's not as much about saving the planet as it is feeling good about declaring yourself righteously for the planet. It's a bizarre thing. So, you know, instead of accomplishing things by compromising and finding new ways of achieving it, usually through market forces, you instead go for a big tax. You go for the ideological solution and refuse to consider other things. Anyway, so Governor Inslee is now going to be set. There's no limit on the amount of money the PAC can collect, of course. And in this case, they have declared that they won't accept corporate money because everybody knows corporations are just totally evil, except when you need them to locate in your state, and then you provide them huge tax incentives to stay here, which, again, it's this weird thing where politicians talk about how horrible they are. They're just awful. P.S., please, please, please come and locate here. And we'll shower you with tax relief so that you'll stay and create jobs and do other things. This obsession, I think, with people trying to make corporates as bad guys instead of thinking, oh, what is a corporation? Why? It's a group of people that have gotten together in order to create an entity where they can do business. So basically, it's just people. It's just people together. So in this case, it's not much different from a PAC. The only difference is one is in for business, the other is in for politics. Governor Inslee, by the way, I'm not in Governor Inslee's political side. I don't side with him politically, but I almost wish I could work for him to try to boost him up in the Democrat primaries just because I want to see a debate between Inslee and Trump.
It would be so entertaining. We're pulling for him.
I feel bad saying it out loud because, you know, I also care about, you know, the country. But I so badly want to see that mano a mano matchup when it comes to debating skills, because neither one of them, I think, are overly great at the
both
debate.
Very confident.
Both wildly confident. Both absolutely, shall we say, questionable when it comes to the knowledge base. Although I think it's been proven before, you don't actually need that. You just need good zingers. So it's Inslee's secret sauce versus Trump's negative comments and slams. Who could ask for anything more on television? All right. Fastest 15, story number two, a story near and dear to, I'm sure, to Governor Inslee's heart. A plastic bag ban has passed the Snohomish City Council. They banned the single-use plastic bags. That's so annoying, the single-use aspect, because – They want everybody to know, oh, well, all you do is you take those bags home and you use them once. Well, sometimes that's true. Most
it's
of the time.
Almost never true.
Most of the time I'm using.
Everybody saves them and you put them away, you use them in.
You're throwing out something else.
Garbages.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
It's the liner for your bathroom can. It's the thing that you're using to pick up the dog poo if you're walking the dog. Diapers, you know, you wrap them in there to kind of minimize the biohazard. All that kind of thing. Just they're a multi-use bag.
And you can recycle them.
And you can even recycle
them. Never throw them away. I always recycle.
Although it's tougher now that China has said, we're not taking your plastic anymore.
Yeah. Well, Kohl's still does.
But that's true of most recycling.
Recycling thing.
Yeah. That's true of most. So the Snohomish City Council passed this law, and it's going to go into effect January 1st of 2020. Customers will be charged 10 cents for paper bags. So what they've done is they've said, look, first they didn't like paper because you're supposedly killing trees, even though really they're using byproducts of trees that are going to be cut down anyway for other lumber purposes. It's not like people cut down really great lumber and say, let's take all this super valuable lumber and turn it into pulp. So first they make it hard to get the paper bag and they switch to plastic. Then they say, no, plastic's evil. And now we're going to charge you extra money for using the paper, which is clearly renewable because we don't like you using these bags. Instead, we want you to use the renewable bags, which are supposed to be the cotton bags that you have, even though the science has shown in multiple studies that the overall environmental impact of the cotton bags is bigger than the plastic bags because you have to use the cotton bags so many times in order to actually reduce the overall footprint of pollution and other things, the energy footprint that's required in the creation of these bags. So the quote here from the council president, Jason Sanders, in this news release, he says it provides a substantial benefit to the environment, you know, and it provides a reasonable amount of fairness between the retailer and the consumer and the government. No, it doesn't. It doesn't do any of those things. It doesn't do anything substantial for the environment. That's a crock. You know, if you look around and look at what the real problem with the environment is, it's people. People who throw their plastic bags out, they're a problem. But it's not just plastic bags. Nowadays, you've got entire tarp encampments that they don't see as a problem with heaps of garbage everywhere. And yet you act like the law-abiding person who makes the consumer choice of paper or plastic, that they're the problem. What a crock. And if you're trying to save the planet, you're worried about carbon footprint or whatever else, you're not doing anything there either because the cotton bags have a larger energy footprint. So there's nothing accomplished other than the people of Snohomish County that wanted to ban the plastic bags now can feel more self-righteous about banning the plastic bags, even though they haven't actually done anything. So if you value symbolism over substance, by all means, wave your plastic bag flag and say what a wonderful thing you've done for the planet. Care about substance, you might want to take a step back and say, you know what, we've reduced convenience for no reason, you know. And by the way, just one more thing about this that I want to rant about, it's that I see a number of elderly people leaving the store now, and the cotton bags are much bigger, so, and they don't want to carry too many of them, so now they have these giant bags where little old ladies are trying to carry these monstrous things into their car. It's heavier for them. I'm worried about more tripping hazards.
I'm just terrible at remembering to take them with me.
I never, ever remember. I just say, pay the tax.
They can be in my car, and I'll still forget when I get to
the grocery
store.
It happens to me 1,000 times. Yeah, absolutely. So, anyway, congratulations, Snohomish, for doing something stupid, but doing it for all the right reasons. Way to go. You should be really proud. I do love your town. You know, it's a beautiful town, but for crying out loud, you're just imitating Seattle for no reason. Just embarrassing. Speaking of embarrassing, California lawmakers are proposing a soda tax and banning soda at the checkout area. So they not only want it to cost more, they want to make it harder to get. And which is weird because they also say that they're going to use the money for all these great things, but also reduce the money collected by making it harder for you to get your soda. Oh, and if that's not enough, they also want to ban you from being able to get a Big Gulp or a Slurpee in California. Because listen to this quote from one of the said lawmakers here. We have ignored this crisis for so long. We are standing on the edge of a cliff, and they're describing people making choices about their foods and acting like it's World War II, right? This crisis, we're standing on the edge of the cliff. It's life and death. Look, do we have an exercise problem? Do we have an exercise problem and a diabetes problem? Of course we do. There's no question about that. But that the soda is one possible aspect among many life choices. Trying to get government to step in and govern all these things is just a nanny state. There's no end to it. There's no end to the justifications that you could use to police other people's behaviors. And it's absurd. And it treats everybody in California like they're juveniles, which should annoy them. But for some reason, people are, I don't know what it is. They just look around and think, yeah. I need help. I need somebody to make sure that I never buy a soda on my way out of the store because it's in a refrigerator next to the checkout line. I admit they're always overpriced, but every once in a while I'm willing to pay the $2 for the soda because I'm thirsty.
Well, and
I
now
want to drink on the way home.
Those business owners are told where they can and cannot put their products.
Yeah. All you business owners that invested in those little refrigerators next to you, now you can be like Lowe's used to be. I don't know if they still are. But they remember they got rid of soda for a while for a health thing, and it was all water and horrible vitamin water. They were always full. You know, you go to Home Depot and you'd see tons of the soda out or other drinks, energy drinks out. But you go and you see the water stuff. It's just a jam-packed fridge, always full. Because I'm thinking, am I really going to buy this bottle of water when I can just walk down the hall and get a nice, delicious drink of tap? I don't think so. So anyway, California managing to outdo Snohomish in stupidity here with multiple taxes on the people and controls because a bunch of California lawmakers think that they need to govern your life and choose what you eat. I have a toddler where, you know, I'm cutting up little pieces of broccoli and chicken and stuff, and he prefers, I'm very proud to say, broccoli to meats and sweets and stuff.
Wow.
Kid loves broccoli. Now, I tend to give him a little bit of leeway there. I'm giving him more food choices than California wants to give the adults of their state. That should be, I would be embarrassed if I was the lawmaker saying, look, I'm at this town meeting. To justify my salary, what I need to do is I need to pass a law making sure that you don't have the right to buy the size of soda that you have. I mean, some of you people have been buying these 7-Eleven Big Gulps for years. It's been a crisis. I haven't addressed it until now, but, you know, you keep me in office and I'm going to make sure you never have that right again. You know, I can just picture the veterans in the audience saying, that's what I fought a war for. That's the kind of freedom I was looking for. Land of the free and home of the brave, unless they're going to buy a big soda. That's where we draw the line. Just embarrassing, California. Land of Reagan, too. What a sad, sad state of affairs. Speaking of a sad state of affairs, Roger Kraft, who has plenty of money. Is he related to the Kraft macaroni and cheese?
I don't believe so.
No. And for that, by the way, Kraft macaroni and cheese is very pleased right now because Roger has been...
I think they had a rough day. They've been in the news, too.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot about that. They're saying, why couldn't he have been our owner? Anyway, Kraft, the Patriots, owner of the Patriots Super Bowl champions, is facing a charge of soliciting another to commit prostitution. I love the specificity of the headline from Como News. Facing a charge of soliciting another to commit prostitution.
I don't get it.
He was allegedly trying to hook up with a prostitute.
He has a young girlfriend. Everyone thinks that he doesn't belong with anyway. What's he doing going outside?
What ageism? Just because he's dating some 20-year-old, I'm sure it has nothing to do with
this. Well, she just had a baby that he claims isn't his, but that doesn't mean she cheated or something. I don't know.
My guess is there's some kind of prenup where he has the right to say whether it's his or not. I don't know. He's got $6.8 billion. He's plenty old enough to know better. How old is this dude? He looks like what? He's probably close to 80, right? Something in there. Anyway, so he's now charged. No word.
Born in 41.
He'll be able to afford the bail. That's a plus for him. He's only worth $6.6 billion. The New England Patriots.
77.
Yeah, he bought them for $172 million in '94, and now it's $3.7 billion franchise. His lawyers say they deny he's engaged in any illegal activity, and the paper put out a big list of all the suspects that went to this massage parlor. They say they've got video surveillance, but I don't know if it's video surveillance inside the massage parlor or if it's just people who entered the massage parlor. I hope I never have to see the video one way or the other. I don't want to know.
To me that it's creepy. That he and others like him go into these places and think that that have names out there. There's been a local person that got in trouble for this as well. But they go into these places and they trust these people that see them there, that they hang out with. That they trust those people cannot be bought, and they all can.
And there's no cameras. You know, they're thinking there's no, there's, you got $6.6 billion.
Who's Bezos' been? Girlfriend's brother could be bought. Everyone could be bought.
There's, what is it? Michael Jackson had, shall we say, a weird Neverland thing going on for a long time. That chicken's finally coming home to roost, but the guy's been dead for years. R. Kelly's finally, he's got warrants out for his arrest now. He's had some weird kind of mansion, you know, arrangements going on as well.
It's a special kind of narcissism. They think that they can get away with anything.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like there's the guys that take the Howard Hughes, I'm a perv approach, but without, I'm not indicting Howard Hughes here. I'm just saying they commit whatever offenses within their own compound so they can control all things. And then there's the dudes that are just, they're super rich, but they walk into some place where people are really excited about making $100 and they're thinking, oh, sure, I can get away with whatever here, you know, or $1,000. But when you're $6.8 billion, maybe you're just so used to getting whatever you want, it doesn't matter. By the way,
I guess he wasn't getting what he wanted from his girlfriend.
I don't think that's necessarily true. Maybe he is a person who takes joy in dominance over others or degrading. I don't know. Maybe he's totally innocent. That's what his lawyer says. Mm-hmm. He was just there for massage.
Sure.
Look, arthritis is no joke. You know, maybe he's got some. I don't know. And I don't want to know. And I don't want to see that video. But we'll probably make for an interesting discussion between he and his much, much younger girlfriend later on this evening. Test results are in for a judge who was charged with drunk driving at more than twice the legal limit. Judge Monica Hawkins of Franklin County, Ohio, blew a blood alcohol level of 0.199. Remember, drunk is 0.08. We have some audio of the judge.
We do. This is from Fox 8 News.
Ma'am, you've got vomit down here on your door.
330-300-DL.
Have you been drinking?
Yes.
Okay.
A Brimfield police officer responds to a 911 call about an SUV that drove into a ditch while getting onto I-76 during a snowstorm Sunday night. The driver identifies herself as Portage County Common Pleas Court Judge Rebecca Becky Doherty.
I'm Becky Doherty. I'm the judge.
You're a judge? So this is what we're going to do, okay? I'm going to take you, we're going to put you in the cruiser. I'm going to take you back to the department where we'll do the testing there because, again, this is in a safe area.
Judge Doherty, who was a former prosecutor, becomes emotional when the officer places her under arrest for suspicion of operating a vehicle while under the influence.
Are you kidding me?
Am I kidding about what?
I am absolutely out of my mind with...
You're intoxicated.
I am so intoxicated, but...
According to Brimfield Police, Judge Doherty refused to take a breathalyzer test,
which
under Ohio law could result in a one-year suspension of her driver's license.
Probably knew it was going away anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to fire up the BAC. Are you going to be willing to do a breathalyzer test?
No, you need to call.
Okay. Rebecca, I'm going to ask you one more time, and this is going to be considered refusal. Are you going to be willing to perform a breathalyzer test?
No.
Okay.
While in the booking area of the police department, Judge Doherty indicates that she would like to call Major Larry Lembert of the Portage County Sheriff's Office and becomes agitated when the officer tells her that her cell phone is still in the SUV.
What's the deal with what?
Give me my phone so I can make a phone call.
Okay. Your phone is in a puddle of vomit in your car, which is
I
on the side
it.
Of... Can I finish?
Absolutely.
Which is on the side of the road that you crashed into.
Yes.
After Becky Doherty was booked on the OVI charge, her daughter arranged to get the judge a ride home.
I love that officer.
Nothing but gold. He keeps his cool pretty well. He's pretty patient and disgusted, you can tell. But
it's like he's dealing with a teenager.
You can just picture the lawyer, you know, saying, all right, good move, not doing the breathalyzer test there. But when you said, hey... I'm super intoxicated. That kind of ruined the whole point of it, you know?
But she gave a, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
And then name dropped later.
Right.
And then, yeah.
She was, you know, she's no kind of, it's a different, it's not the billionaire trying to get away with everything. It's, I'm a person of authority and I'm used to getting away with things, but I just crashed in front of the wrong cop. So good for him. I'm proud of him. Also, she says, according to her guilty plea, that this has been horrible, but it's going to make her a better judge. If I were a criminal in her area, I would use that for everyone.
She'll
every
be
lawyer.
More sympathetic.
Yeah. Yeah, every lawyer should use that. Whatever crime you've committed, saying, you know what, Your Honor, this experience has been horrible, but it's going to make me a better human being. See if she catches on. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM.
I go
Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. I read one of the most heartbreaking stories in the Seattle Times. It was reprinted throughout the Pacific Northwest in the News Tribune of Tacoma, and it dealt with the challenge that Washington State has, particularly with teen runaway foster kids, and how at certain points they are often arrested in order to basically get them off the street. And Washington tends to be a leader among the nation in a category that we probably don't want, which is the number of kids in foster care that are arrested. Here to talk about it with me is Ross Hunter, Secretary of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Thanks so much for making the time, Secretary. You've got a very tough job, and this is one of those exceptionally tough situations. Thank you.
Yeah, if you read the article, you saw that I spent the whole day out with the reporter and with one of our what we call the missing from care locators, who we have 9 of them all over the state who are trying to find kids that have run away from care, and it was a searing emotional experience.
Yeah, I can imagine, because it described you were going from a tent encampment to tent encampment looking for this now 14-year-old girl, and she appears to be in the company of a much older individual, which, of course, it looks to me like she's highly at risk and most likely in an abusive relationship of some kind.
So we have no idea about that because we don't. No, you know, I don't have any data about that actual relationship. We would always be concerned about that, just as you would if you were a father. You'd be concerned about that, and we're in that role, and that we have that kind of responsibility, and we worry about this girl. We worry about the 300 or so kids every year who run from care.
Yeah, and it looked like even other residents of tent encampments, according to the story, were concerned about that relationship. But setting aside this young lady who is, for privacy reasons, obviously not named in the story, and it's unnecessary for our purposes. But for you, one of the challenges here is in Washington State, we arrest these runaways who go out, and this is basically, it's not an arrest to put them in jail, but it's an arrest to get them in a location that's for their own good. And you're struggling with trying to find an alternative to that. Why don't you first describe for us how we got to the situation where we are we're the state that arrests the most kids in this way, and secondly, what alternatives are you looking at?
So I'm not actually sure we're the state that arrests the most kids this way. You are when you look at the whole set of kids. We use detention in this state for kids who don't go to school, right? Not just foster kids. And I absolutely agree we should stop doing that. It is not good for kids. They should be in school. They should not be in detention. We don't use detention all the time for kids who run from care. Our foster care locators don't have any arrest authority. So we go out and we try and find them and we try and talk them in. All right, we try and say, all right, what do you need? What kind of place? This is often the kind of situation, though, that results in a teenager, maybe with some behavioral health issues, in one of our offices overnight or in a hotel overnight, which is also not a very good solution. But all states have a problem where kids, particularly older teenagers who have come into care and who are used to having a lot of freedom, are in a place that has sort of rules, and they sometimes, not always, but sometimes run. Of the ones who run, they tend to run, once they've run once or twice, they tend to run more frequently, and we try and find them, and we're trying to find a place where both they and we agree is safe and healthy for them to be. If we can't find a kid, or if we know that a kid is in a dangerous place, we will ask the court to issue a warrant so that when the cops find them, which they sometimes do, they will be able to bring the kid in. And then we try and get them into a better placement. We're not leaving them in detention.
Is there, and I didn't mean to imply that if you felt like I was. Right. I felt like the department is in between a rock and a hard place, because you've got an extremely difficult social situation here, and then you have the difficulty of trying to provide for care for some kids who based on the emotional baggage that they're carrying around, you know, oftentimes they're not making the best decisions for themselves. They're not, they don't really know what's best for them because, right. As you point out, you know, if all of a sudden you're facing a household with rules designed to protect you, but you've not experienced rules before, you might resent that, as anybody who has, you know, has lived through teen years can understand. But in this case, it's even more so. What are the alternatives to the arrest? Because as I read the story, I thought, you know, poor Ross Hunt, poor Secretary Hunter, because I don't see how you can get around, how you could get rid of the power to arrest if you wanted to get kids out of some of these dangerous situations.
Well, in a lot of cases, we just default to having a warrant out. And we're going to stop doing that. We're trying to do some internal work to identify lower risk youth and try to find a, you know, if the kid is in a place where we think they're safe. So sometimes today the police will find a kid in a Hope bed or in one of the youth shelters and they'll bring them in. Well, we don't want to do that. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So we're going to do some work on fine-tuning our internal process. Of the 300 kids or so a year, I'd like to get that down to about a third. So get rid of two-thirds, say the kids who are first-time runners, and hey, we should just go find them and talk them back in and find out maybe there's something wrong with their placement. But if they're in a situation that we are deeply concerned about, if they're being commercially sexually exploited, which is unfortunately very common nationally with foster children, that's dangerous. It's dangerous for the child. We want to use the ability to bring them in and have a moment where they can detox, where they can get some therapy, and then where we can have a conversation about with them with what kind of placement might work.
Do you find it especially challenging to find people willing to foster teens?
Yes.
Are the rules for, like, home studies, are they different for fostering teens, or are they the same for toddlers? Like, I'm a foster parent myself, and we went through we met, you know, our house toddler-proof, you know, every cupboard's locked and all the rest. It can be extremely difficult, but for teens who are perfectly capable of basically getting into anything, is there a different set of rules for them?
No, we have one set of foster care licensing rules, and perhaps we should think about that. I'm new to this job. I've had the job for about 6 months. And I think that there's some things that we should look at. Safety rules for a toddler and safety rules for a 15-year-old ought to be different.
Right.
So in many cases where we have a, even sometimes a family member where that youth would like to stay with the aunt and we can't place the child there legally because 20 years ago the aunt committed a crime.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're looking at this thing and saying, all right, I got two practical options here. I have a placement with someone who committed a crime 20 years ago that, like, we're not worried about anymore, but the law says, and I got, or I can have this kid on the street. I want that kid in the aunt's house, and I want to do whatever work I need to do to make it be safe. And so we've got to build some flexibility into that to have placements that work for these teenagers, and that's part of our long-term plan about making our placement array work better. But one of the challenges we have, a lot of the older youth, and the older youth who are also homeless and are not formally in the dependency system, is we have a lot of gay and lesbian youth who have run into conflict with their families and are now out on the street, or they've been abused as a result of that. And one of the things that would be really helpful is if we had some foster families who had either experienced that in the past or were very flexible about kids with non-traditional genders. That would be a place where we could have probably the best impact early, and it's a place where I'd love to have the Seattle community step up.
Every kid deserves parents that love them, parents that keep them safe. And Ross Hunter, Secretary of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, I hope you're successful in finding more of those places for all kids. I very much appreciate the work that you're trying to do there. and I hope I can help you in some way in the future. We're just short on time, but thank you so much for making the time here on the Dory Monson Show.
Happy to be on.
Thank you, Secretary. David Bowe is in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. This state of Oregon, our neighbors to the south, they are gearing up for a full rent control fiasco. They want rent control in order to create affordable housing. In other words, they don't want to buy it. They don't want to pay for it themselves. They want to take the property of other people and say how much they can charge for it, how they can use it, and who gets to stay in it. And what they're guaranteeing is a shortage of housing, a further shortage of housing later. Now, they've got a bill and an agreement. The governor's all excited, she says, Governor Kate Brown, excited to be able to sign this bill because it's expected to pass. Democrats are very thrilled by the bill. There was an amendment to it that would have exempted cities with populations under 150,000 and another that would have delayed the measure from becoming law until 2020, giving people time to prepare. But instead, the Representative Tuana Sanchez, Portland Democrat, member of the House Committee on Human Services, said, "We've waited too long as it is. There are people living in tents. It's an emergency." So, you know, again, she's saying that she wants to make it law as soon as the law is signed, and this will control the rents, the ability of landlords and others to control their property. Oregon's measure would do the following. It prohibits landlords from terminating month-to-month leases without cause after 12 months of occupancy and limits rent hikes to once a year. So sit back and think about that. You own a house or you own an apartment building. I don't know if there's a limit to how big the structure is because it's not clear here. But let's say you owned a house or an apartment building. You rent to somebody for a year. All of a sudden, you can't cancel that anymore. Those increases in price are limited to 7% above the annual change in the consumer price index, which may or may not reflect the value of your property, right? Landlords can terminate tenancies only with 90 days written notice. So 3 months written notice and payment of 1 month's rent. So I had to read that twice. You have to pay people to leave your property if you're saying, look, you know what? We had an agreement where you're renting month to month. I've provided you with housing. You know, we've agreed on the price. I don't know what that was, but, you know. Is that?
Yeah, sorry about that. That's my footstool is falling apart right now.
Oh, okay.
Well, it just crashed.
I was thinking, is that earthquake material? Is
the listeners probably
studio kind of collapsing in?
Sailed right over
I wasn't sure, but... you know. Anyway.
Sorry.
So unless these microphones are even better than I thought, listeners had to have heard that.
No way.
It was really echoing through my ears. So 12 months of occupancy, limit rent hikes to once a year. The increase is limited. The landlords would have to pay 1 month's rent with exceptions in some cases. Oh, goody. You know, somebody who has no investment in the property, no risk in terms of, you know, your retirement or other things can be held up in this property, and all of a sudden you don't control it anymore. A landlord can refuse to renew a fixed-term lease if the tenant receives 3 lease violation warnings within 12 months and the landlord gives 90 days notice. That's it. Well, look, I was just talking with somebody the other day who owns a number of properties, and here's what they told me when they saw stuff like this happening. They turned to me and said, the first thing we did is we said, we're selling everything that we have. In terms of, we're just going to collect the money on the increased property value, but we're not going to rent anymore. And my bet is there'll be a number of people in Oregon that have property that are going to do the same thing. They're not going to be under these kinds of rules that restrict them and their property. And they're going to find out that fewer and fewer people are going to want to build rentals under those kinds of restrictions.